live from the palatial yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Infinity Sports Network here in beautiful New York City, sitting on top of the 10th floor of 345 Hudson Street. Welcome on in to a Thursday edition, a March Madness edition of the Zach Gelb Show across all the great local Infinity Sports Network affiliates, Sirius XM, Channel 375, the free Odyssey app, and of course, streaming live on YouTube. We have the number, as always, 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4476. You could always get at me on Instagram, where I'm straight flexing, or via the good old cesspool of Twitter, at Zach Gelb. That's Z-A-C-H-G-E-L-B. March is here. The first four is no more. We are now into the real start of the NCAA tournament. This is one of my favorite days of the year because, quite frankly, there's a lot that we don't know what is going to happen. And I always love this time of March because there's so many people right now that we've never talked about, we've never heard about, and they will be on this show today, tomorrow, next week, and they will be thrown right into the spotlight. You know, and I've done this for a while now. I will never forget being on the air when I did the overnights. And I remember being on the night that you had UMBC become the first 16 seed to ever defeat a one, right? And I remember talking to Tobin Anderson after Fairleigh Dickinson found a way to beat Purdue years ago when you had, I think it was Old Dominion who beat Ohio State or Oral Roberts. It was unbelievable. And you had Max A. Smith, who was phenomenal. So there has been great storylines. Porter Moser with Loyola Chicago. You go back to Jim Larrañaga all those years ago for George Mason with them getting to the Final Four. Butler, remember them going to the national championship game. Brad Stevens and Gordon Hayward missing that shot from half court that just missed, which would have been the greatest NCAA tournament shot that I've ever seen. And obviously, I was able to see Chris Jenkins and all that stuff, too. And you have the Christian Laettner moment. So today's just such a special day because there's so many teams and there's so many people that aren't on people's radar and we don't really know about them. And boom, they become rock stars. They become sensations overnight. So I look at the NCAA tournament and we've had two games through. And so far, it hasn't been anything where you've seen any crazy upsets. Creighton as a 9 seed beat Louisville. I thought Creighton was going to win. I didn't think it was going to be by this wide of a margin as they ended up winning 89-75. But that's what happens when you have Jamiah Neal have a career day. 29 points. You have Kalkbrenner, Stephen Ashworth. And you look at that Creighton team, that would be the first thing that this is the first take of the NCAA tournament that I have in the first game. Is Creighton beat Louisville. I love Pat Kelsey. I thought Pat Kelsey acted like a child at the end of the game. All right, you get the technical foul. That's one thing. There was no reason to, like, lunge at the official. I think that was more so just frustration because you knew that your team's great season was coming to an end. And then some dope in the stands who was a fan, he threw a water bottle on the court and it delayed the game for 2 minutes. But Creighton, to me, could potentially pull off the first major upset, and I'm already advancing to the second round. And that's without, like, knowing the other mayhem that's going to go down today. Like, maybe a 14 seed wins. Maybe, you know, I know High Point lost today, but maybe have a 13 seed wins. Like we've seen crazy things happen, right? I've seen Princeton as a 15 seed beat Arizona as a 2 seed. So we've seen some magical things happen over the last few years. But with all that being said, I look at Creighton, and that's the first team I circled now, and I go, maybe I didn't have them going far enough in the NCAA tournament. And the reason I say that is because I don't like the way that Auburn has been playing. You asked me a month and a half ago, who's going to the championship game, I would have told you Auburn and Duke. Now, when I made my bracket selections the other day, I ended up going Duke, Florida in the Natty, Duke winning it all. But I look at Auburn, they've lost 3 out of the last 4 games. I love Bruce Pearl. I hope Bruce Pearl goes as far as possible this year because he's a coach that deserves to win a national championship. And I know they're playing right now Auburn, Alabama State. And no, I'm not anticipating, right, this to be a FDU story. I'm not anticipating this to be a UMBC story as well. I am looking at Auburn, and I think they're going to win this game, right, as a one seed over 16, and they're right now up 12-5. But I look at the second round, that's going to be a massive test for Auburn. Because Creighton's through, Auburn wins, Auburn goes up against Creighton. You could see a number one seed fall on Saturday. You could definitely see it. So this game for me that Auburn's in right now, I don't put much stock in it. They're going to win the game. And I know that now you have to hesitate when you say that a little bit because we've seen two 16 seeds beat a one seed in the history of the NCAA tournament, and both of those happen fairly recently. But the first big, big test, in my opinion, for one of these number one seeds is going to be in the second round when Creighton goes up against Auburn. You know, I look at the road for Houston. I look at the road for Duke. If both of those schools aren't in the Final Four, I would be disappointed because I don't think their road and their path, and ironically, you would think, oh, Auburn has the easiest path, right? They're the number one overall seed. That's just not the draw of the bracket this year. Like, who is going to really challenge Duke when you take a glance at that bracket and that region? You know, is it Alabama? Definitely a possibility. You know, I don't think it's going to be Baylor. I don't think it's going to be Oregon, Arizona. You know, is it a BYU? Is it Wisconsin? I look at that road and some of the better teams there. You know, Duke's really biggest challenge to get to a Final Four could be going up against Alabama. So if Duke is not in the Final Four, you know, it's weird to say you'd be shocked because it's the NCAA tournament, but I'd be really disappointed. And the same is for Houston. You know, I look at Houston. Kelvin Sampson is a magnificent coach, and he's done a wonderful job with the Cougars. But we're talking about who could be their toughest matchup, and people are saying it's Gonzaga in the round of 32. Well, Gonzaga's got to beat Georgia first, and that's no gimme in an 8-9 game. You know, can Illinois go on a run with Casper? You know, I guess it's possible. Kentucky, what are they going to look like first year in the NCAA tournament with Mark Pope? You know, Rick Barnes, you know, guy's been around forever. It's been a long time since he's had big-time success in the NCAA tournament. So I look at Duke and Houston as two number one seeds. They are expected to get to the Final Four. You know, I look at Florida, and you look at the road for Florida. Okay, there could be a little bit of a little uncomfortable feeling if you face UConn in the second round, just because even though UConn is not a strong UConn team this year, until the champs are out, and if Hurley wins one game, and if UConn takes care of Porter Moser and Oklahoma, well, then they're playing with house money. Like, UConn is playing with house money in this tourney after winning back-to-back titles, and no one's actually expecting much out of them. So can UConn find a way to pull off an upset against Florida that no one would see coming? Yeah, I don't think it's impossible. But, like, at least in that region for Florida, you got UConn. You got Maryland. You know, you take a glance. You got Kansas and Arkansas. St. John's, too. And the Johnnies won their first ever Big East Conference Tournament Championship since 2000. So I look, though, Florida, the way they're playing, they're the hottest team in the country right now. I even though I, you know, it wouldn't shock me if UConn could find a way to get it done, you know, I do think Florida is not only going to the Final Four, I think Florida is going to the national championship game, or have them losing to Duke. So I look at the start of this tournament and the number one seeds. You know, I don't think that we'll have really a big early test for Duke or Houston. And they have the easiest roads out of all the number one seeds. But you look at, you know, I'm not going to pick against Florida right now early, especially with the way that they've been playing and winning the SEC tournament, where, quite frankly, even in the championship game, they didn't play their best brand of basketball, and they still found a way to win with these. But I look at Auburn, where they're trending, and I know they're up right now with 14:57 to go in the first half up against Alabama State, 12-5. And, you know, I'll shake my boots on that one when we get down to the final 3 or 4 minutes and the game's close. And I expect Auburn to wipe the floor pretty damn good here, especially with their guards, who Bruce Pearl told everyone aren't putty cats. But Auburn all of a sudden is going to get put on upset alert in the round of 32 on Saturday, because if Creighton shoots the ball the way that they did today, a team with a lot of experience, with McDermott as their head coach, who is a very underrated coach. You know, Kalkbrenner, who's been there 4,000 years at Creighton. Ashworth, who's like also, what, 23, 24. And you have the transfer that comes over in Neal, and he has a career day in the NCAA tournament. Like, that's a team I don't think they're going to play with fear. Now, it doesn't mean Auburn can't beat them, but that's going to be the first moment when you look at this tournament that I could see potentially coming. I know there's going to be other moments today to open it up where you're like, wow, I didn't see that in a million years. But that's something that does jump off the bracket to me, where I did have Auburn going to the Elite Eight, where now I'm sitting there and I'm like, I don't even know if they're going to get out of the round of 32. So let's do this, though. As we got all the games going on right now, Purdue, it was a little bit close, but they ended up winning the game 75-63 over High Point. I know High Point started to become a trendy upset pick. I had them in my bracket. You have Creighton, who took care of business up against Louisville, 89-75, and the game's going on in action right now. You know, I can't do play-by-play, so I won't do play-by-play, so I'll just tell you the scores. Wisconsin is up on Montana 72-57 with 7:47 to go in half number two. SIU Edwardsville is getting blown out by Houston. Second half just underway. The Cougars are up 54-26. As we mentioned, Auburn up 15-8 up against Alabama State with 14 minutes to go. And still to tip off, you have Clemson McNeese, you have VCU BYU, Georgia Gonzaga, Wofford Tennessee, Arkansas Kansas. Good coaching matchup there with Calipari himself. You have Yale and Texas A&M, Drake and Missouri, Utah State, UCLA, the Johnnies and Omaha. You have UC San Diego, Michigan, and Texas Tech, UNC Wilmington. That's day number one of the NCAA tournament. Let's just address this right now, since the tourney's still fresh and we're only two games in. You know, who's the coach that has the most to gain in this tournament? And who's the coach that has the most to lose? Now, my answer for most to gain, I think, will surprise some people. But the way you ask this is very ambiguous, because you could do it for one run, or it could end up being in a legacy question. Like, Rick Pitino right now, without question, is the top five coach in the history of college basketball. Not just a season, in the history of college basketball, right? We know he took Providence to a Final Four, and that's not where his resume really starts if you're talking about the praise, but that is something of significance. You also then look at where he's won. I know the NCAA will not acknowledge it, but he won a national championship at Louisville, and obviously he won a national championship at Kentucky. So winning two national championships at two different schools is already a remarkable conversation. And I know you could mention John Wooden. You could mention Coach K, right? You could go through Dean Smith, Adolph Rupp, you know, Roy Willie, all the legendary coaches that you know. But if you're doing a top five list already of all time in the history of the NCAA for college basketball, Pitino's in your top five list. Now, if he wins a national championship this year at St. John's, year two, right? It's already remarkable what he's done. Big East coach of the year, has the most improved player of the year, has the Big East player of the year, won the regular season title and the conference tournament. Right? We're already singing the praises of Rick Pitino, and what he's done is already magnificent. And it feels like it should be unbelievable, but knowing who Pitino is, it's not unbelievable. But if he's able to win a national championship in a program that I'm a New Yorker, right? I live here in the city. In my lifetime, St. John's has pretty much been irrelevant. And this was a program that has lost their way. They had no direction, and Rick Pitino was supposed to be the savior. And last year, they got screwed out of making the NCAA tournament, and this year, they're back with a vengeance, and they are the number, they're a number two overall seed. So if Pitino this year can win a national championship at St. John's, it's one of the unbelievable turnaround stories we've ever seen. But in terms of his legacy, and I know, right, the seven straight championships that Wooden won, right? We all know the titles that he won. We all know the wins and the titles that Coach K has won. We all know what Dean Smith did. I don't know how you could say that in the history of college basketball, there wouldn't be a more impressive coach than Rick Pitino. Not the most titles, but he would have three national championships at three different schools if he's able to win one this year. One at Kentucky, one at Louisville, and then it would be one at St. John's. So for Rick Pitino and having this great success everywhere he goes, and also taking Providence to a Final Four, I don't know how you would have a more impressive resume. Because it's not all just that one school where you just win the most amount of titles, and that's still unbelievably ridiculous. But we're talking about a guy that has already, you know, been to 7 Final Fours, has won 2 national championships. If he could find a way to win a 3rd national championship and go to an 8th Final Four, right, and win the Natty, I think he'd be the most impressive college basketball coach of all time. With what he's been able to do at the multitude of stops, it would be unbelievable to win 3 national championships at 3 different schools. So I actually think in a weird way, even though Pitino's already a top 5 coach of all time, he is the coach that I have that has the most to gain in this NCAA tournament because of that legacy conversation. Samter, who is your coach, by the way, in this NCAA tournament that has the most to gain?
So I am going to have sort of a very synergistic connection between my most to gain and most to lose. So for me, most to gain is...
Well, don't give me most to lose. Just give me most to gain.
I'm not
going to
give it to you yet. You'll see it later. But for me, it's Mark Pope with Kentucky.
Ooh.
Right? First year there, trying to fill in the shoes of Mr. John Calipari, trying to prove that he belongs there.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to prove that he can win at Kentucky and follow the legend. Because we've always seen the guy who follows the guy never does well.
By the way, I hate that saying.
Yeah.
I hate it. I know that it's usually proven to be true, that if you follow a legend, you usually fail, and then the next guy ends up succeeding. But to me, if you're a great coach, you should be ready for that moment. It's not easy, but you should be ready for that moment, take it, and go kick ass. That's what I would say.
I don't disagree with you, which is why I think he has the most to gain. Because if he is one and done or gets knocked out in the second round, people are going to say, all right, you know, maybe this guy isn't ready for it. So,
but you know
Mark
where
Pope,
I, you know where
has
I struggle with
gain.
That, though? I struggle with that because Calipari just lost to Oakland last year, you know? So if let's say Kentucky loses early in the NCAA tournament, I think that there's already people, right, that right now – They question the Mark Pope hire. He's one of their own, so that could ease it a little bit. I thought that Mark Pope did a really good job at BYU. I like Mark Pope. And yes, it would be a bad look to lose as a 3 seed to the 14 in Troy, but I think any of that criticism, I'm not saying it wouldn't happen, but I think it would be a little bit too premature, especially with the guy that just left. It'd basically be like you repeated the same thing, even though we know what Cal did for recruiting. We know what Cal did winning a national championship. But I would just think that's a little too premature for me. I wouldn't have considered Mark Pope. So it's just fascinating when you ask a question like that and you have someone that obviously that's what makes the world wonderful. When you could ask a question, you could think you know what you're talking about, and then boom, someone gives you a completely different answer that you didn't see coming. All right, Stu, who's yours?
All right, so mine is Hubert Davis.
Ooh.
I think... the tough job is already done, right? Like, some people said they shouldn't be in the tournament. They made the Field of 68.
Yeah.
They won their first 4 games, so now they're in the tournament. 11 seeds win a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't think Ole Miss is this world beater. Like, I think they could. There's a world where they could beat Ole Miss. And then you're facing Iowa State or Lipscomb in the next round if you win that game. Like, there's a way that this team can make it to the Sweet 16. And then if that happens... obviously, this isn't, you know, Carolina winning championships or getting to the Final Four, which is expectations for them. But I think the chatter of him being fired or being on the hot seat, that's totally gone if they win another game or two in this tournament.
And since 2018, round of 64 results, 1 versus 16 are 22-2. 2 versus 15 are 21-3. 3 versus 14, 22-2. 4 versus 13, 17-7. 5 versus 12, 16-8. 6 versus 11, 12 and 12. 7 versus 10, 14 and 9. 8 versus 9, 8 and 16. All righty. Let's get to the guy with the most to lose. I actually think it's Bruce Pearl, who I love. But Bruce Pearl, we know what he's done at Auburn's been magnificent. The SEC tournament championships that he's won throughout the years, getting them already to a Final Four. He has already exceeded expectations. But last year, you lose to Yale. I thought they had a team that could go make a deep run. For most of the season this year in college basketball, you've been the most praised team. You've been viewed as the best team. And in the last week and a half, that's changed because you lost 3 out of 4. I think, like, I don't want to say this is a last chance, but if you don't win now, then when will you win? So that's why I end up putting Bruce Pearl as the most to lose in this NCAA tournament. Samter, who's yours?
like I said, synergy. So if I'm going to go Mark Pope with the most to gain, my most to lose is Calipari with Arkansas. First of all, even if he wins his first round match, he's likely to play Patino in the second round, right? He's got Bill Self in the first round, Patino in the second round.
Be a good
if Calipari loses in the first or second round again, it's just, like you said, same old for Calipari, right?
Yeah,
he brought all these guys over. He made Arkansas this contender so quickly, and then boom, first, second round loss.
But it's fascinating because, and you're allowed to answer however you want, the two teams that you picked in Kentucky and Arkansas, at least the way that I'm evaluating it, I'm not feeling a lot of pressure on either of those two entering the NCAA tournament. That's just me. All righty, Stu, who's yours most to lose?
There's synergy with mine as well.
Ooh, you guys love this synergy stuff today. What are you guys, like holding hands behind there?
Something
saying,
like that.
We loving and synergy and all that stuff?
Not with that jersey he's wearing.
Oh, yeah. It's an ugly Devil's jersey. That's true. Ugh. Should be embarrassed to wear that.
We'll see. Mine is John Shire. And the reason mine is John Shire is because you talked about replacing legends, and he hasn't done a bad job replacing Coach K. They're obviously a number one seed for a reason, but he has the best player in the world, a generational talent in Cooper Flagg, who looks like he'll be trending towards being healthy. I just think if there's an early upset, if they lose somehow early in this tournament, there's going to be a lot of people calling for his head. So I think they need to make, at the very least, an Elite Eight run, probably at least Final Four. If we're being honest, I think he does have pressure on him. I don't think he's going to get fired, but you'll start hearing the chatter on that.
Yeah, he definitely won't get fired, but there is a Duke standard, and that's to go win national championships. And he's had good teams the last few years, but you know, I think the farthest they've gone is to the Sweet 16. This year, you also have the easiest road out of all the number one seeds, and you got to find a way to get to the Final Four. And you got a team that I think is the best team in college basketball in the Duke Blue Devils, and we'll see where the health is of everyone as this continues to move forward. So just give you a few score updates of the game that are going on in play right now. Wisconsin 79, Montana 62 with 2:32 left in half number two. So in the ball game there, Houston has 14 minutes and 29 seconds remaining. They're up 58-30 up against SIU Edwardsville. Auburn up 19-13 against Alabama State, 10:38 remaining in the first half. And already in the books, we have two finals. Purdue taking care of business as a four seed up against High Point. No upset this year. They do win the game 75-63. And Creighton handling Louisville, a 9-8 victory in favor of the Blue Jays of Creighton, 89-75. Zach Elp here with you on the Infinity Sports Network. Have the Pittsburgh Steelers lost their way? I'll give you that answer next. All righty, welcome back in. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Let's hear from Bill Cowher. He was on the Dan Patrick Show, and he was asked what the Pittsburgh Steelers should do at the quarterback position.
I personally think that Russell Wilson is your best choice. Russell's still out there. You have a chance to get Aaron Rodgers. And can he still throw it? Yes. Is he mobile enough? I think so. But does he really want to play? I mean, the longer you wait, you just have to wonder, where is his heart and how much does he really want to do it? I said, you know, I just think when somebody starts talking about retirement, they've already checked the box. So they've checked out to some degree. And, you know, so how much is he motivated to want to come here and be a part of trying to win a championship and then consequently bridging a bridge to the next guy?
So I understand what Bill Cowher is saying. And I understand that Bill Cowher, right, won a Super Bowl with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and Mike Tomlin has as well. But the way that some people talk about the Steelers, I don't think reflects where they're accurately put in the year of 2025. You know, I heard Cam Hayward the other day, right? We played those comments. Like, we don't need to sell you on the Steelers. You either want to be here or not. I'm like, what am I selling you on? Yeah, sure. It's a gold standard organization in the annals of NFL history, right? It's a top five franchise when you look at their name and right their fan base and the history associated with it. But this is an organization that I think that the aura of playing for the Steelers has really gone away because they're a good team. You're never going to be bad. Like, you're not going to Pittsburgh and be picking in the top 10 of the draft. Like, you're not going to have 5 wins. You're not going to have 4 wins. But they have, for the last few years, have been in that range of, all right, like a bad season is 9-8. And then there are years where they could go win 11, 12 games. But then come postseason time, that's when they fade. And there have been years where they started the year off undefeated, like 10-0. They look like they're going to be a force, and they can't win a damn game down the stretch. Now, there's been other years where, you know, they're 11, 12 wins going into the postseason. And you win 11 or 12 games in this league, you should be able to win a playoff game. And since the 2016 season, that was the last time they won a playoff game, was in 2016. So it has now been a long time since the vaunted Pittsburgh Steelers have won a playoff game. So I understand that, okay, you could say, and I've said it before, the Steelers should have some pride. Like, don't make this be on Aaron Rodgers' terms, but you kind of need Aaron Rodgers. Because either way, if you bring in Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, the goal isn't to win a Super Bowl. They could say, oh, we're a championship program. You know, we have championship aspirations. But how can you really make that claim and have me believe it when you haven't won a playoff game in a long time? So I look at that team with the defense that is usually great but did not play great last year. So even if they bounce back, your offense, sure, you have DK Metcalf. I don't know what mood George Pickens is going to show up in. You lost Najee Harris, so I know Steelers fans just like to trash Najee Harris. The guy had four straight 1,000-yard rushing seasons, all right? And that offensive line in Pittsburgh isn't the greatest offensive line that we've seen in the league. So I look at Pittsburgh. The goal for me is to go get a quarterback that puts you in the best position this year to win a playoff game. Because the Steelers should be good, but they're not very good. They're not great. They're not elite like a lot of people still talk about them. And yes, it is impressive that Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season. It is impressive how often Mike Tomlin is in the playoffs. Mike Tomlin is a damn good coach. But two things could be true. All those things I just said could be true, and we could also acknowledge, but the Steelers haven't met their expectations, and the Steelers haven't been the team that they should be now for 7 or 8 years. Because it's been a long time since they've won a playoff game. So I don't think the Steelers are in a position, really, where it's like, oh, Aaron Rodgers shouldn't have to be sold on the Steelers. Now, if it's the Steelers or the Giants, and those are the only two teams, it shouldn't have to be much of a sell job. That's fair, because the Giants suck. And if you're Aaron Rodgers, if Aaron still thinks that he could win a Super Bowl in this league, you know, with those two teams, either the Steelers or the Giants, he's delusional. What do the kids say? DeLulu now? He would be DeLulu, all right? That's what Aaron Rodgers would be. But the closest thing that Aaron Rodgers at this stage of his career could get to winning a Super Bowl without actually winning a Super Bowl, like his version of winning a Super Bowl would be winning a playoff game this year, especially in Pittsburgh. Like, think about how crazy of a statement this is. This organization is tied for the most championships in the history of the league. 6 Super Bowl championships they've won. Now we're saying if they win a playoff game, that would be a massive accomplishment. So the way we talk about the Steelers needs to change, where we could still acknowledge they're good. They're good, but they're in a terrible spot right now. And I know that people will say, oh, I would love to have some of the success that the Steelers have had the last 7, 8 years. Like Stu, he would love it, right? But I would argue that it's actually like the worst place to be in. Because you're not great enough where you actually win. You're not great enough where you're going to conference championship games and you're going to Super Bowls, right? You're not in that level. But you're not bad enough where you're in position to pick in the top 5, top 10 of the draft to finally find a replacement for Big Ben Roethlisberger. Like, you're not in that realm. You know, at worst, even if Tomlin has his worst year ever, he's winning 8 games, right? And in most times, he'll go win 9, 10, 11 games, but it doesn't lead to anything. It doesn't lead to anything where you say at the end of the year, oh, that's really successful. I changed the way that I'm going to talk and view the Pittsburgh Steelers. So I just find it fascinating how a lot of analysts and hosts, they just can't call it real with the Steelers. And we look at their history in the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, you know, the early 2000s, even the 2010, and like you look at that and you go, oh, the Steelers, they're great. Oh, Aaron Rodgers should be honored to play for the Steelers. It's like, honestly, Aaron Rodgers, you could argue the Steelers need to sell Aaron on Pittsburgh just as equally as Aaron right, needs to sell himself to the organization. I think it goes both ways. But because they're grandfathered in, because of the brand, we still view them as a great organization. And when I mean that, because like they're run really well. But when I say great organization, I'm talking about a team that's constantly there, constantly wins. And I'm talking going to championship games, going to Super Bowls. And when you haven't won a playoff game since 2016, yeah, the way that we talk about you should be differently. So honestly, I'm at the point where Aaron Rodgers, and I'm kind of fed up with this. All right, we all know he wants to go to Minnesota. Minnesota's out for now. So if it's the Giants or the Steelers, I don't think we're going to get a decision anytime soon. Just make a decision, pick one of those teams, or retire. And quite frankly, if Aaron Rodgers retires, we'll talk about it, obviously. Right? We'll look back at his career. We'll have conversations about it. But I don't think I would be bummed out. Like, there are some players when they retire you're bummed out about. Like, oh, I thought they could go another year or two. If we're talking about maybe you go to Pittsburgh, maybe you make the playoffs, maybe you win one playoff game, or you go to the Giants, you're just chucking it up to Malik Nabers and hoping to win 6-7 games, both of those are kind of a sad way for Aaron Rodgers' career to end. It really is. And I know there's no perfect ending to a career. Some guys have won championships and rode off into the sunset. That's the perfect ending, but usually those things are fairy tales. But I do think the way we talk about the Steelers, we can acknowledge Tomlin's a good coach. The Steelers still have the great brand. But they need to get back to their winning ways because the standard there has fallen off if we're just accepting what's happening in Pittsburgh. All righty, we'll take a timeout. Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. We'll get to a news brief next. Ack will get you updated on all the games going on in the NCAA tournament and more. Here is the Ack man, Rich Ackerman.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
This portion of the show is sponsored by Hyundai. The Hyundai Getaway Sales Event is going on now. Get deals so right, it almost feels wrong, but don't wait. Visit your local Hyundai dealer today. I told you we were becoming TMZ around here when it comes to the overnight position. We saw Hickey was in a tuxedo yesterday, so we threw him right into the spotlight. And today, I was walking around here, and there was a Shepard Wolf that was in the building. David Shepard is here. So you interviewed for the overnight position today?
I did. It's
okay.
Great to be with you, by the way, Zach. It went well. You know, I'm not going to lie, and anyone knows this who does job interviews. You probably haven't done one in forever.
Yeah.
But when you interview, there's always something you feel like you left on the table.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I know Samter and Kovacs haven't interviewed for a long time either. But
that's actually not true. They both have interviewed for jobs.
They're interviewing for the overnight job, too?
No,
Who's not interviewed for this job?
Not for the overnight job, but they have interviewed for other jobs through the years. But anyway, the reason I brought you in is because, would you argue, you are one of the basketball guys here at the network?
I think so.
Like, if I'm saying the strength of David Shepard, not that you can't talk other sports, but your main sport, if I say you got 15 minutes to go get the overnight job, I give you a topic, you would probably go basketball, right?
No, I would want to surprise people.
Okay.
Yeah, because football pays the bills. So
fair.
I wouldn't go NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I could talk NBA till the cows come home. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there's a player on the Spurs last night.
Uh-oh.
That had 34 points.
Yeah.
Now, let's hear this player. He was getting interviewed, and Flava Flav, he crashed the interview. This is courtesy of FanDuel Sports Network.
My family's here. It's an unbelievable night. Thank you, everybody, for coming out. We love you guys.
Flav, have you ever seen a shooting performance like this before?
Hey, let me tell you something. I don't care what nobody say. My man is on fire.
Flav of Flav, Sandro Mamu Kalashvili. Everybody give Mamu their flowers tonight. He earned them. Yeah, boy.
Now, Shep put in the headphones, so he was able to hear that audio. I didn't know that they were going to put the name out there.
Yeah.
But anyway, did you have any clue how to say that guy's name before this?
Not a chance. And the embarrassing part about that is I do a show for the NBA channel. And I still,
on Sirius, right?
On Sirius. And I had to do that last night.
Oh, it's not an easy name.
I couldn't pronounce it to save my life. And what you even hear, when he was drafted, they just call him Mamu. Now, I can tell you his stat line, 34 points, 7 of 7 from three-point range, 19 minutes, but I can't tell you his last name.
There's too many syllables there to say the whole name. So the first name is Sandro, S-A-N-D-R-O.
Right.
The last name is spelled M-A-M-U-K-E-L-A-S-H-V-I-L-I.
Yeah.
Now, you just heard it said. I'm sure that... Right, there's no way to retain that quickly.
Not a chance. I mean, it makes Antetokounmpo seem like Smith.
Yeah. How do you think you would say this?
I have no idea. I mean, I need reading glasses for that.
Oh, you are getting old.
I really am getting old. Mamu Lakalakashpida? Is that how you pronounce it? I'm not even trying to be funny right now. I remember him from his Seton Hall days. That's all I remember about him. I didn't even know he was on the Spurs. Like, when you think Spurs, you think Wemby done for the year. You think De'Aaron Fox done for the year. You don't think of Mamu.
I would say Mamu... Kalash Vili is how I'm trying to look at Mamu Kalash Vili.
By the way, can anyone pronounce the first overall pick from the Hawks? I mean, that's a tough one.
Yeah.
I mean, forget it.
So go ahead. We have the pronunciation one more time.
Sandro Mamu Kalash Vili.
Mamu Kalash Vili. That's up there. You get into the Zach Gelb Show power rankings of names. You know, I loved Giannis Antetokounmpo. There was a guy offensive lineman. I think it was Halepulivati Vaitai.
It's not bad.
That was up there. And there's a few others through the years.
Tua
Tungo Vailoa.
No, the first name. You do that. Oh, well, you're a linguistic expert.
No one now, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Tua, though, Tungo Vailoa.
Right.
Because I remember interviewing in Alabama, and I heard him, I asked him, how do you say your last name correctly? He goes, Tungo Vailoa.
Right.
And I get so many messages. It's not Tungo Vailoa. It's Tagovailoa. And I go, you're wrong.
If they don't correct you, no one else has the right to insert themselves in the conversation and say, this is how you should pronunciate it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
So anyway, they didn't ask you that question. Wait, you're telling me David Mayernick and Ryan Hurley are doing these interviews for the overnight job, and they didn't ask you how to say Sandro Makulashvili or whatever his name is?
For the record, I thought they were perfect in how they handled the interview. Yeah, I couldn't say anything. I couldn't say anything more about the way our bosses handled themselves. Yeah. Me, on the other hand, I was not perfect.
The suck-up
by the way,
spot here.
I didn't know Bilotti was on the. He's a big part of this too.
He's management.
It was great to see Pete.
Oh, he was in the. Was he? So I knew interviews were going on yesterday.
Yeah.
But I really knew they were going on today because David Mayernick had a very nice shirt.
He looked
on.
But he's lost a lot of. I mean, he's always looked good, but he's lost a lot of weight too now. I mean, he's really slimmed down.
I never thought that David was a big guy, but he eats sardines every day.
Does he?
Oh.
He didn't eat the pizza that was outside in the hallway?
Well, yeah, that's cheap pizza. I'm sorry.
It's so good.
No, that's a dollar slice pizza. That pizza's not good.
Yeah, again, when you're overnight hosting, any pizza's good.
I'm going to get everyone pizza next week, and we're going to get La Industry, Sweet 16. So we're going to do that. But anyway, what I was about to say to you was when you get to that pizza in the hallway, ugh.
I've already had like 3-4 slices.
I'm going to Plug Uglies tonight on the Upper East Side, which used to be Bar Coastal, and their wings are absolutely delicious. But anyway, good to see you. I got to continue with the news brief.
Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
Thank you. It's the Good Shepherd there.
Say hi to Daily for me.
Yeah, TMZ, we will continue. Anytime we see someone walk into that back office, we're bringing them on, and we're talking to them about the overnight position. And so far, Hickey and Shep, 2-for-2. Neither of them embarrass themselves. You know, I would come in and just say something explosive, really get people talking about you, but away we go. All righty, Rick Pitino, who is your rival?
There's only one coach I really considered a rival in my whole career. And I've been blessed to coach against Frank McGuire's last game, coach against Dean Smith. There's only one coach that's ever I had a strong rivalry with. And today I respect him as much as anybody in the game, and that was Jim Calhoun. We hated each other, BU and Northeastern hated each other, and there were 300 people at each arena. He goes on to coach at Connecticut, I go on to coach at Providence, and we hated each other there as well. And today, I don't think I respect any coach in the game as much as I respect Jim Calhoun. So looking back on it, it was really funny at that stage of BU versus Northeastern.
You know, you go through some of the most impressive coaches of all time, right? And we talked about Pitino, Dean Smith, John Wooden, Coach K, Roy Williams, Adolph Rupp. Calhoun's definitely in there too. You know, with the way that he made UConn actually a program and made them a blue blood, I love Calhoun. Have for years, obviously. Darren DeVries, he was actually talking to Indiana during the season. Now he's the new head coach of the Hoosiers.
Yeah, and obviously the process, you know, is the process on how it plays out. And, you know, as you're going through their season, they were, you know, very respectful of making sure that my focus continued to be on our team. And you know, certainly appreciated that.
tampering alert, tampering alert. Like, oh my God, talking to the guy during the season. It just shows you, like, we're so naive. Oh, that just came together out of nowhere. Like, oh, Will Wade and NC State came together out of nowhere. Guy's still coaching in the NCAA tournament. Darren DeVries, right, gets snubbed the next day. He's the head coach at Indiana. That's the life, though, of college coaching. Here's KCLA News. Najee Harris calls out the Steelers.
It was just a team where, you know, we lost Ben. We lost a lot of O-line. We just didn't know anything on offense, really. We didn't have identity. We had a young guy coming out quarterback. You know, I was young. The team was young. And I really didn't have nobody to almost learn from the offensive side. I think the veteran guy on that team was like a 2-3 year vet. And that's really nothing, you know what I mean? Like, he's still learning himself. And I'm coming in and, you know, I'm just trying to look for people to you know, pick their brain off of. And it was just defensive guys. So I'll go to the defensive guys to talk to them. But, you know, it wouldn't be too much they could tell me about an offensive thing, you know what I mean? So, you know, through my years, I learned a lot that, you know, only I learned firsthand. And I feel like here, you know what I mean, we got a lot of veterans that I could learn even more stuff from. And even at the quarterback position and the O-line position, you know. So it was an interesting year there. I'll just say that.
Yeah.
Interesting year.
You know, I've never heard an athlete just call out an organization in just such a smooth, calm way. There wasn't much animation, and he wasn't very boisterous with those comments. But, yeah, the Steelers' offense has been a problem for a while. All righty. Zach Gelb Show, Infinity Sports Network. I'm wearing a Mets spring training hat today. The YouTube chat says it's an ugly hat. Do you think this is an ugly hat, Stu? Honest opinion.
I like their new spring training hat. That one just seems like a normal hat. I don't know.
Yeah, right?
I don't think it's ugly. It's like very neutral.
Yeah. Santer, you think this hat's ugly outside of it being a Met hat? I know you're going to make that joke.
I mean, I plead the fifth.
I like the hat. And you know what?
Yeah.
If you two don't like it, that's how I think it's actually a good hat. And same with the YouTube chat. What do they know about fashion? Coming on back, it is the Zach Gelb Show.